We're doing Pirkei Avot with Rabbeinu Yonah. We're up to the third chapter, the ninth Mishnah, Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. Okay, so Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa Omer. Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa was extraordinarily pious. It says that the whole world was sustained, would have food because of his merits. And Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa personally lived in dire poverty. You guys know he had a carob tree growing in his front yard, and he would have the volume of maybe two Coke bottles of, 3-4 liters of carob, and that's what he ate, that was his diet. They lived on carob, so he must have been very skinny. So Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa didn't bother him, he was very happy with that. We have all kinds of fantastic stories about Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. You guys know the story about his wife and the neighbors. They didn't have too much food in that house, right? And there wasn't too much to cook for Shabbos. But his wife didn't want any other people to know that. Everyone else was cooking for Shabbos. So it says every Friday she would put logs in the oven, and then neighbors would see smoke coming out of the chimney. And this way it would at least look like they were having food for Shabbos. So it says that they had a nosy neighbor. And this neighbor said, "They're so skinny. And I don't see any food going into that house other than carob. What are they cooking for Shabbos? I don't see anything there. They're so poor." So one time she came on a Friday. Smoke's coming out of the chimney. And she was talking to Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa's wife. And she waited for the moment when Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa's wife was doing something else. And she went over to the oven and pulled it open. And the Talmud says a miracle happened. There was food there. There was food in the oven. And she called Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa's wife and said, "Quick, quick, your food's about to burn. It's perfect now. You got to take it out." It says Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa's wife once said to him that she can't handle the poverty anymore. Too hard on her. And so he said, "Fine." And the Talmud says, this is a story quoted in Talmud, that they found a leg of a table that was made of gold. So he said, "There, we can sell this and we'll have all the money we need." She was very happy. And that night she had a dream and she saw them sitting in the Garden of Eden. And everyone around them was sitting on a table with four legs, and their table had three legs. So she wakes up in the morning, and she says to him, I changed my mind. I don't want that leg. I don't want the money." And Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa prayed, and it says a hand appeared from heaven and took back the leg. And the Talmud says that the second miracle was greater than the first one. It says in Talmud, heaven is accustomed to giving, but heaven doesn't take back. In heaven, they don't need anything you have to offer. So it says that it was a greater miracle on behalf of Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa's wife. This story gives us a lot of insight. A lot of insight into our nature, into other people's nature. Very often we ask for things, and if we could only envision where it'll lead us to, then sometimes that changes our perspective. Yes?
Questions, because I think we get the wrong idea. First of all, is one supposed to have that kind of poverty, self-inflicted, when you're, for example, a pious leader of the community or someone who certainly looked up to? In the first miracle, you think, the neighbor got caught putting the food in, and she says that, the second one, no idea how to explain. So it raises a question, and, what does it say about you almost have to? It seems like he felt that living at this level was spiritually very beneficial for him. Obviously, unless the community was incredibly cruel, and they see that someone who's known to be so pious as the whole generation was sustained because him. I mean, you see, even in the worst of times, people make sure that the people who don't leave are fed and have Shabbos.
No. Let's review Jewish history.
The community doesn't care if somebody who's the leader, the people you just mentioned are so, I mean, they live extremely simply in Shars Hesed before it became what it is today, obviously. But they didn't, you know, people, as you grew up, nobody had. Nobody had. It's different. But when some people have, isn't it a mitzvah? I mean, you know, you think, you know, to only Shabbat a little bit. I don't know.
Historically, we can start with Moshe Rabbeinu. He was the poorest Jew of the generation. And no one thought to give him something, and he never thought to accept anything. If he's managing, that's fine. If you look at the Rosh, you look at the Tur, the son of the Rosh, he was the rabbi of the community, and he writes in his work that he doesn't have money to buy anything special for Shabbos. He eats the same food 7 days a week. And he asked his father, should I starve one day? Should I fast one day? So then on Shabbos I could buy something a drop different than what I'm eating all week. Should I take that step? He writes that in the Torah. He says his whole life he used to ask his father, and his father never gave him a clear answer. He wasn't sure what he should do. Historically, we find over and over again that that was not the case. The community gave him that much. That's what the community gave him. I can tell you many, many stories of the same nature. Usually, people don't think about it. And if they think about it, so they don't think that way about it. We have repeatedly in history, it's usually if an individual decides to do something about it, they do something about it. But if it's left to the community, so then the masses usually are negligent or worse. Rabbi Soloveitchik was put in an insane asylum by his community. Rabbi Yosha Ber Soloveitchik was reported to the IRS by his community. Of Washington Heights of Yeshiva University. Right. He didn't go to... He spent a year or so proving to the IRS that he was honest. At the end of the court case, the judge said, never in his life did he meet a person so honest about Rav Yosha Ber Soloveitchik, but his community wasn't too happy with him. A rabbi who's doing his job will make enemies. I said once that before I moved to Kochav Yaakov, I don't think I had an enemy in the world. But now I think I need security cameras. If you're doing your job, you're going to make enemies. There's no other way about it. You know, I told a story last night about a couple that got engaged and was conned into the connection. And I cannot imagine that the other side is too pleased with me when I notify the people who I knew that there's a big lie going on here. There's, you know, you don't make friends that way.
I know that there's that expression, you know, if everybody likes you, you do something wrong. If everybody hates you, you do something wrong. But the idea that, you know, I don't want to belabor this, it just surprises to me. I could see how somebody says, for my own spiritual development, this is the path I've chosen. But the fact that the community would let the people...
But he wouldn't accept. Rabbi Chanina Ben Doza, if you'd ask me, wouldn't accept. And until that point, his wife was with him.
Right. And that I understand.
And his children were with him.
I understand, which was my question. You know, maybe on someone like his level could say, I do Kavod Shabbos in a different way.
But right.
I can see that. But, you know, as an example to Yisrael, I find it difficult to relate.
But it's a great example. You know, Rav Steinman didn't have a refrigerator for many years.
Right. I mean, within...
Even now, Rav Steinman's house is the epitome of simplicity and modesty.
I heard 2 rooms, 12 kids, you know, so I understand.
But that's very important.
A carob tree.
But that's important.
Okay.
You see, the Talmud made a point of recounting that.
You know, but what about Rambam's golden mean? You know, it's not supposed to have such extremes if we can.
So many things. I'm saying the golden mean for different people is different things. And for... on his level, he was happy with it. That's what we discussed last night, that in spiritual growth, you have to grow to the level where you're happy. You can't keep pushing yourself and be unhappy. But if you're at a level where you're happy with that, the Talmud quotes that there was a rabbi whose wife sent him to go learn for 24 years. And as he was at the door, she said, by the way, what am I supposed to feed the kids? And he said, when you go to the pond, So you have those reeds that grow at the edge of the pond. When you cut them, the inside is edible, and that's free food. And we hear that, and that sounds comical. And the Talmud's telling you that she said, thanks, have a safe trip. You know, that was where they were holding. We have here in the community someone who has, you know, the parents' bedroom and the living room, and all the kids. They had like 10 kids. They all slept in the living room. All of them went that path. I'm saying, so that tells you the kids didn't grow up thinking, oy vey, this is a horrible life we have. They grew up thinking, this is amazing. I wish I could do this. And they did. So that tells you something. I'm saying that's the big question. Can people do it in a way that their children are happy, or do the children feel neglected? A lot of it is a question of the wife. A lot of it is the question of the husband. It's a question of what message are you giving the kids? How happy are you, and how much do you convey your happiness? Or how much do you say, if only I could, I would? But if they're happy with it, and the message that it gives, you know, that's... Yeah,
I get what you're saying. I was just kind of surprised by the degree of it. No question, simplicity, modesty.
But I would even add something, that the Talmud tells us that the rabbis were so careful not to waste and not to work to make money that they didn't need. Because time is such a precious commodity. The Talmud says there was a rabbi who was lying on his deathbed, and he asked, what do I have in the cupboard? So they told him a certain spice, which you couldn't use, you know, it's a spice. And he said, oh, I'm so sorry. He was about to die, and he said, you know, that means I worked to make the money to buy the spice, which I didn't use. I have leftover of the spice, so that's wasted time. The Talmud tells us that Abaye and Rava were so careful. So we go and we work because we want to be comfortable, and we buy extra shirts and extra chairs and extra telephones. And the Talmud tells us he was on his deathbed, and he said, is there anything left in the house? They said, yes, a little bit of the spice. Look at how exacting he was. You know, he didn't have bread left. He didn't have anything else. No milk in the pantry. But there's a little bit of a spice. And he says, oh, yeah, I feel bad. I wasted my time. I'm making money to buy that spice. So we couldn't live that way. Like Rabbi Feinstein writes in a responsa, if a person doesn't have life insurance, he's got a problem today. You can collect money. You can use tzedakah money to buy him life insurance today or medical insurance. Today, we're on a different level. We need different security. Yeah, I'm saying there's... We're not on that level, but we have to understand that's something to aspire to. It's you know, so far beyond us, but it's...
Right. I heard a couple of times to lock the door after he made a note at a certain time in his grocery.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let someone else make money. I'm doing
it. Yeah. Yes, sir.
I understand what they're saying, but I strongly disagree. Moshe was made with a poor person, but he was provided with food from Hashem. He could get any taste from the food he wanted. So that's different from eating carrot juice every day. Also, Moshe Chaim Lasanto says this level is okay, but you're supposed to strive to the level where you make everything holy and you eat. Then you have this story about Yosef something that was, you know, working the whole week and eating minimum, and then he spent everything on Shabbat. Like the goal is to have a beautiful Shabbat. It's not to have dry bread and Shabbat. If that's the only thing you have, okay, you have to say thank you and be happy with that. But you're supposed to strive for having a, you know, it's like a wedding Shabbat, more or less. You're wedding the bride, and, you know, Shabbat is more, you have dry bread, you know, that's why would Moshe Hanasandu say this level? Why would we have the story about the, you know,
Yosef Mokir Shabbat.
And also, you know, he gets awarded with a diamond and so on and so on. He used the money on charity, and he has to, you know. It's also like, I think it's extreme. Like, it's okay if you're supposed to strive to have a nice Shabbat.
I think that sometimes when we read about something that's very distant from where we're holding, so then we can say, I don't connect to that. I don't understand that. And we can move on and revisit it later. We shouldn't change or adulterate the message that Chazal are telling us. The fact that right now you connect to Yosef Mokir Shabbat and to what you learned with Rav Moshe Chaim Letzato, in Baya. Kol HaKavod. That's wonderful. Chazal did tell us this about Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa. The Tur does write this, and he doesn't write it as something that's a fault. And the Gemara does say that about Rava. So we have many messages within the Talmud, and I definitely agree that for most people, reading about Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa is something that's beyond our realm. I agree. But that doesn't change the fact that there is such a level, and it is a good level. To say, you know, this is right and this is wrong, no. Sef Mokir Shabbat is important, and the idea of honoring Shams is important. Agreed. But that doesn't change that what Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa did was also important. I could answer the difference and why it's not contradictory, but I'm not sure there's a point right now. Because I'll still agree that for most of us, this is way beyond our perception. We don't begin to understand the level of happiness that reigned in Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa's house and the happiness that had nothing to do with what you were eating. We don't understand that. When I say we, I include me. I'm also very far from that. And nonetheless, there is such a level. And it's there. I would not come and try to fit this into Ramchal or Yosef Mokir Shabbat. Again, I don't think there's a contradiction. I think there are answers, but I'm not sure it's worth investing the time. Yes?
It's me now thinking, putting a lot of myself in what I'm thinking now instead of the story. I think what you can learn from the story is, how to behave in poverty, like in poverty, you can still be happy, you can still be spiritual. If you can have a little bit more vitamins and be a little bit more healthy, take them.
Okay.
Nobody says you have to have meat every day. I also think that I have any meat more than I should, and maybe I would appreciate Shabbos more if I only ate meat on Shabbat and on Rosh Chodesh. Then maybe I will appreciate Shabbat even more because it was a time you only had meat on those times. And I agree. When you have something every day, like the miracles every day, like in the Torah, you appreciate things less. That's not fine.
We will learn the Mishnah at the end of Pirkei Avot that says there are components to acquiring Torah. There are steps. One of the steps that people tend to get to miss is yodat mekamo, persons knowing their own level. And it's a difficult step. You see, it's one of the 48 attributes you need to acquire Torah. That means it's not easy. And what you're saying, that there are people who will try to emulate someone when they're not on his level, throughout Jewish history we see people made that mistake. And that's also true. Agreed.